This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And Davina Montgomery is in, the editor of Geelong Business News. Davina, thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
Very well. I saw you out in the foyer listening intently during that interview. Very interesting conversation.
It's always fantastic, I think, when we can hear politicians have a chance to just talk instead of doorstop.
Yes.
Across all parties, across all the board, I think it's a fantastic thing. I don't think we hear enough of it.
That's exactly right. That's what these long-form interviews are about. And arguably, community radio is the only institution that can do that in Geelong, given that our rival commercial, they do a great job, but they've got time constraints and all that type of
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it highlights the role of commercial radio everywhere, why we need to have these publicly funded and why we need to have our community radio stations up and running.
So, it was an interesting conversation. And as I was saying to Richard, of those topic areas that we covered, you could have devoted a whole segment to them, like the point about the impartiality or the independence of the Fair Work Commission, for example. Maybe we'll start on that particular point, because I've been someone that's questioned penalty rates, the more excessive ones on things like public holidays and Sundays.
Yeah.
Never said get rid of them altogether, like as in everyone should be paid the same regardless of what day they work. I myself have received penalty rates working in retail back in the day, so I know what it's like to receive it. So I've been sort of an advocate for having this conversation, but I think it is still a shock when the Fair Work Commission does rule it and you realise, well, people are actually going to lose money here. At least that's what I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, I tend to agree with you, Mitch. I think penalty rates, the system of penalty rates, I think, was established around the idea that on Sundays and on particularly weekends, but particularly on Sundays, people would go to church, and that's why you were being effectively compensated for losing out on that time. You know, today's a very different world, and a lot of people who are working on weekends are working because it works for them to work on those days. That being said, that I'm the same. I was an art student, so of course I worked in retail and hospitality. So that's the grand graduation gift that you get, I think, for most arts courses for the last couple of decades.
That's funny.
But yeah, look, you know, penalty rates make a big difference. And if you're working, and most of the people, let's be honest, are working in hospo and retail, are working at the bottom end of the wage scale, and these are fine lines that you start drawing about what people can afford to do and can't afford to do. So how do we balance that? How do we create a system? And I think that penalty rates aren't the issue. I think the way that we think about work in general and how people balance that work is a bit of the issue. And certainly the rates of pay at the bottom end of the scale and where flexibility works for both people, because it tends to be skewed one way or the other in most of these arguments. You know, sometimes it'll be skewed against businesses putting more people on or struggling to maintain cash flow. On the other side, you've got people who are just working. And the last thing that we would ever want to see is a situation where we have a working poor, as we do in America. And that's, you know, that should be all of our focus, to say that wage inequality is actually one of the biggest drags on economic growth in the developed world. It's starting to hit home in Australia, and that affects everyone. How do we find an answer? I spoke to a few businesses about this, actually, when the decision was on, and one was really interesting. This was a cafe down in Queenscliff, and I asked the owner, and I said, look, how does this... This was the day that the decision was coming down, and we heard about the decision while we were there. And he said, look, it doesn't affect me at all, because I sat down with my staff, you know, a couple of years ago, and we negotiated a situation where they pay 25% above award across the board, and no one gets paid extra for working Saturdays and Sundays. So that was one solution that one business has made. And I think that's a story that is played out across a whole lot of the economy. The other thing that we can't afford to ignore is the fact that there's a reasonable cash economy that happens
exactly.
in this space as well. So it's all very well for regulation to sit there and government to come in, or in this case, the Fair Work Commission to make a decision. But, you know, when you're talking about a large cash economy, then regulation doesn't really apply, does it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So, yes, it is a very tough issue. And, you know, you do feel for those workers that are going to lose a portion of their salary. But at the same time, you know, can we complain about, for example, the high levels of youth unemployment in some suburbs of Geelong? I think it is well up into the teens, as far as I know.
Absolutely, it is, yeah.
So can we say that, but then say, well, we don't want to have fewer barriers to employing people in the first place?
Yeah, none of these things are easy conversations, and there's no glib and simple answers. There just isn't. And you're exactly right that the idea that someone's wage gets cut because someone makes a decision in a tower somewhere is kind of horrifying, I think, to most people, especially when you think about, you know, if that's someone's a lot of their wage. It can be a third of people's wage or more that sits on those weekend penalty rates. But it has to, like I said, it just has to be a system that works. And if we're going to have a system that works, people have just got to start talking to each other. And that's across the board. Good decisions are never made by a few people making a decision. Good decisions are made when we listen to a lot of views and when we get real factual information, try and take as much of the emotion out of it and just really look at how things work and why they work and why they don't.
That's it. Energy prices, this is a very big issue at the moment. It's probably one of my favourite topics to talk about. So what's your stance on all this?
Oh, wow, good question. I was sitting down rather late last night with my TV on quietly in the background and my laptop plugged into the thing with my phone at my side, writing a letter to energy policymakers saying, please, 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 as a voter, as so many of us are, can you just stop worrying about your ideology and where you sit on these issues? Put the facts on the table, start talking to each other. We need a national energy policy. We don't need a state-based system. We don't need an RET from one government and then it getting knocked back from another. We need real discussion here. Real debate, and we need a policy, and we needed it 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I mean, these are conversations that we've been having for well over a decade. So my stance is that we are paying people to do a job. We're paying people to go into representative politics and into energy policy positions and to make a call on these things. Because when you've got a situation where in the last few months we've had multiple joint statements that have covered, that have brought together coalitions of willing that you would never imagine being together. So we've got environmental groups and industry groups standing shoulder to shoulder on this. We've got social services and we've got business standing shoulder to shoulder on this. And, you know, and these are some of the, and a whole lot of these are actually coming from the energy industry themselves. And I've been writing stories about this for a good decade or so and have spoken to quite a lot of the peak bodies around the energy industry. And all of them are saying the same thing, that there is money out there to invest in the energy system. Australia is a fantastic country to invest in. You know, we have a very stable policy environment. We have a stable political environment. We've got a relatively stable economic environment. People want to invest money, and that means jobs in this country. But if we don't have a stable policy environment, which we just haven't had, then they are not going to do that. And I heard Richard speaking before, and he's exactly right. You know, you can make all the ideological statements that you like, but the people who are behind this, who are investing, are going to invest on what's going to be a good investment for them in the decades to come. And those technologies are available now. There are very good systems in place. I mean, the whole thing with the blackouts in South Australia just was absolutely breathtaking, the response to those blackouts. Now, we know that this is a complex system. We know that there are all sorts of things in play that roll into the rise of renewable energy. We've got systems that haven't been invested in adequately. We've got baseload power that got turned off. You know, and then we had a natural disaster. We had a storm that came through and blew the power lines. To turn around and turn that into an ideological argument, I found that really incredibly frustrating because, again, it was an example of playing politics with an issue that shouldn't be about politics.
Well, I'd like to hear just more factual information, as you said, you know, rather than people coming from a certain viewpoint. For example, put all the information out there on the table. So, you know, this is how much your power bill will go up if we use this. This is how many blackouts we might expect to have.
Absolutely.
So what are all the costs? So people that come from the perspective of renewable technology, you know, renewables are fantastic, anything else is terrible. People from coal, is fantastic, renewables are terrible.
Yeah.
And it's so polarizing, I suppose. Yeah. No sensible middle ground.
Well, here's a good baseload fact for everyone to work from. Wholesale electricity prices in Australia have pretty much doubled, and the wholesale gas prices along the East Coast are the same, if not more. So that's a fact, and that's something that we're all paying for, and we're going to increasingly pay for this until we can get a situation when we have good policy that is going to make sense on a global environment, in a global economy, because energy prices are global now.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just Australia as an energy producer. I know that we have a lot of the resources to produce energy, but until we start making decisions that are based on a global market, then those decisions are going to be poor ones. And the longer that we lag and the longer that we keep this cycle of politicking going, the more that we're actually all paying, because these things don't get any cheaper to put in place. We're actually going to be paying more.
And power bills are through the roof. And I think our power prices might be among some of the most expensive in the world,
they
if not the most expensive.
They're certainly getting there. And that is a direct response to a failure of policy.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And just last of all, the air show. Tell us about that.
Yeah, fantastic. I went out to the air show last week. I wanted to, I've been meaning to do this for a couple of years and I've just never quite got there. I've been to the air show, but not to the trade show. And the trade show was what I really wanted to go out and have a look at. In Geelong, we've all heard plenty of conversation about the defence industry and about the potential for investment or growing jobs in Geelong around the defence industry. So it was really actually fascinating to go out there and see what was some of the stuff that was going on in the background. So I wandered in to the air show, which is a pretty long walk for all of you who've managed to troop down to the car park, if you got into the car park. What a nightmare that was. I feel your pain. But the one of the first things I saw was this, what effectively looked like a shipping container with a couple of solar panels coming out of the top of it. And for anyone who's been out to the air show, you know, there isn't a lot of shade. It was a pretty hot day. It's about 32 degrees this day. So I was already melting from the walk to the car park. I was pretty happy to head over and see what this shaded thing was. And as it turns out, it was a portable, deployable, solar-powered cooling unit. Now, this was produced by two companies on the back of Land Forces, which happened in, I think, September last year. So in the past 6 months, these two companies have joined forces. One's in steel manufacturing and one's in refrigeration air conditioning technology. And these are based in Melbourne. And they've put this unit together. That means that they can drop in a cool unit to anywhere in the world. It can be, it's fitted to NATO planes, so they can just roll it onto a NATO pallet. So any plane that goes out to disaster relief areas, defence, all of those things, pop the solar panels up and you're running. You don't have diesel generation issues. You don't have to take any of those with you. It can be retrofitted into a medical unit. It can be retrofitted into a freezer unit, into a cool unit. I was really happy to get a cold bottle of water out of it. And it was just an example of how quickly this can shift. Mm. So it was interesting to me to see that starting up and to start to think about what it means when we take our view, I think, back from the Land 400 and all of the things that happened around that and kind of go, you know what, there is just an enormous amount that's happening out there. I think I was standing there talking to the guys behind this unit for about 20 minutes, and in that time I would say there would have been roughly 20 people from the military popping over to have a look. They've had really wide interest in the medical sector as well, and of course disaster relief. That was one example. I tried on a firefighting augmented reality suit that's been developed out of Deakin.
That was the Deakin one. Yeah. I saw it,
which was just phenomenal. And again, you're standing there and, you know, I put the suit on and I held the fire hose and tried not to fall over. And the person who this suit was designed around was a good foot taller than me. So it wasn't exactly the best fit in the world, but gee, it was a fantastic experience to actually be able to sit there. You're out at the air show, you're in a big, you know, effectively a big tent. But in that moment I was in that fire. Yeah. And I could see what you see in a fire, and I could see what happens when you spray water in the air and how that drops the smoke down. Mm. And I could feel the heat as I turned away. So this is something that's being now commercialised. They're taking that out to, again, Army, Navy, and certainly then into disaster relief. So this is something they can train on site. They took it out to a ship and they had no interest, and then they got a couple of guys to come and try it. And by the end of the time that they were out there, I think they said they had sort of, you know, couple of hundred people who tried this suit. So these sort of innovations where we look at the technical skills that we have here in Geelong and how they're going to solve practical solutions, that was really interesting. And there's boundless examples of this out at the air show, but these were just a couple that I think gave a really good example of when we start to talk about how we can supply into industries like defence and how we can further diversify for essentially our manufacturing sector. The opportunities are endless. And I know the guys from the Geelong Manufacturing Council were out there doing some, you know, taking names and making deals as well. So
It was really good to see. I really enjoyed going on the trade days for the first time. And just to talk to the people that are on the cutting edge, the local businesses, because we talk a lot to politicians and we talk a lot to community leaders. But I thought, from my point of view, it was great to speak to people that are actually on the front line.
Yeah, these are the guys that are doing stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, there's so much capability, I think, around, and we tend to not hear enough of it because, you know, everyone's busy doing things. So finding that time to be able to step out and actually see the people who are doing the work was, I think, a real opportunity and, you know, and really heartening as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a really interesting conversation as always, and catch
Absolute
up next
pleasure.
Time.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if the next time that we came in, Mitch, that there was some movement on energy policy?
No, it won't happen. But anyway, we can always dream.
And there goes
can't
a pig flying past the window.
That's it. You can always dream, can't you? Think big. Davina Montgomery there, the editor of Geelong Business News, 18 to 11, Monday Sport next.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.